I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
So, Right to Repair.
Today I'd like to discuss Right to Repair so that someone who has never heard of this movement can understand it better.
The government is currently looking at the Right to Repair, which is essentially about whether it is easy enough to repair the things that many Australians use every day, like farming equipment, a computer, or your smartphone.
You actually are allowed to repair the thing you own. There's no law against that. But it's the companies that make the things that we're often trying to repair that are trying to stop you before you even get that far.
A draft report from the Productivity Commission released earlier this month says that it's not. And it recommended a suite of changes to improve the right to repair and reduce the amount of electronic waste created in Australia. So, why is it so hard to get your gadgets repaired, and how can we change that? Today, the right to repair. It's Thursday, the 24th of June. What is the right to repair? Why are people talking about this?
The right to repair is effectively that when you buy a device, from a laptop, for a phone, to a car, to a truck, anything like that.
Josh Taylor is a reporter at Guardian Australia who covers technology, amongst other things.
You should be able to repair it so that it works again.
Is that a big issue, that things are becoming harder and harder to repair?
It is quite rife, in particular in the car manufacturing sector as well. Mm-hmm. Increasingly, you're seeing, you know, more and more cars now have, they're basically computers now. They have, you know, thousands of computer chips in them. And through the software, they're making it harder to get even your car serviced unless you go to an authorized service company that has the diagnostic tools that you want to use. And it's a similar story in the agriculture sector as well, where, you know, if you want to buy a tractor or something like that, you can be locked out of being able to fix it yourself or get someone else to come and fix it if you don't have the authorized repair tools that the companies provide. But you definitely see it more in the consumer technology area, like phones and laptops and tablets, more than anywhere else. We're now at the stage where, you know, there's a new phone every 6 months and people are replacing their phones on average around 2 years. And there's this growing sense that rather than repairing their device or keeping it for longer, people are just upgrading to the new one because in a lot of ways, it's easier than getting it repaired.
Why is that? How hard is it to get your phone repaired in Australia right now?
Well, it really depends. It depends on how old the phone is, what the warranty is, and what's broken. Mm. So the first thing to say here is if it's not your fault that the phone is broken, if it's just a fault in the phone and it's still under warranty, the manufacturer has an obligation to repair it, replace it, or refund it. Mm. But if it's something you've done yourself, you've smashed the screen or dropped it in the toilet, then that can be a bit tricky. You can take it to the manufacturer, but that can end up being quite expensive. Mm. So, for example, if you wanted to take it back to Apple and get a screen fixed out of warranty, you're looking at anywhere sort of between $219 for the sort of last version of the iPhone that they cover, which is the 5S, up to $519 for the iPhone 12 Pro Max.
Oof, $500 for a screen. That's intense.
Yeah. For Samsung, it can cost anywhere between $140 and $460 out of warranty, depending on the device. So roughly sort of, it's a little bit cheaper, but not too much cheaper. But going to an independent repair place can be a bit cheaper by $100 or so, but it's becoming harder and harder for independent repairers to actually do their work.
I'll get phones sent to me that are like in saddy bags that are filled full of rice, and I have no idea where this whole rice thing came from. But rice does absolutely nothing.
Wait, it doesn't?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
That's my mind blown. That's, you know.
Rice doesn't help. It's good for eating, though. Great carbs, but not so good for the repairs. Leave that up to us.
When people ask you what you do you say that you're kind of an IT repair guy or a TikToker or both?
Definitely not. I would not refer to myself as a TikToker.
What's digging? Got another MacBook here that just ain't booking.
Max Hawker is a computer and device repairer living in the Whitsundays in Queensland.
If it plugged into the amp meter, it's not drawing a healthy draw. Let's check it out then.
He documents his work on TikTok.
I literally just document my repairs, like you said, and post it up.
And straight away, I noticed this guy down here. He doesn't look too healthy. So with all those,
I really like the idea of making content. So that was really the driver to start putting my videos out there and stuff like that.
You've got an iPhone 7 Plus here.
Mark says he was having a few beers and accidentally spilt one on this guy.
With TikTok, I am very much just being the Aussie larrikin version of myself.
Guess what? An iPhone here that went for a swim. Yeah, nah. She went for a swim. Crank this baby up.
In IT, I do everything but design security cameras and running cables and all that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, so you, like, fix, like, hard drives and keyboards. And I'm like, yeah, that and more.
And we've got a working phone. All in the day's work, mate.
Has it become harder to do your job, and especially to repair phones, in the time that you've been working in the industry?
Well, I definitely have experienced in the last 5 years that the trend's getting worse and worse. You hear it all the time from people that are older than me. They'll turn around and go, things aren't made like they used to be. Like, you used to be able to fix everything, and now it's throwaway society.
So I've been speaking to a third-party repairer, Max Hawker, and he says that it has become much harder to repair phones in the past 5 to 10 years. Can you talk me through what's happening in the day-to-day with these tech companies and these repairers?
So, for example, if you've got the latest iPhone, the iPhone 12, for example, it's going to be almost impossible to get anyone to repair it other than Apple right now, essentially because it's the latest technology. It's hard to get the parts to replace it through, you know, third-party distributors and things like that, unless you're an authorized repairer for Apple. And even if you do it, if you don't have the proper tools that are able to access the device and make sure it's working or properly through Apple, then it just won't work when you plug it back in.
What do you mean it won't work?
So they generally put in what is called software locks, which essentially mean that if it is an unauthorized repair, it won't work when you plug it back in.
The iPhone 11 is a prime example. If you swap over the rear camera, there's nothing in that should be any different. But if you swap those over, the portrait lens in that camera freezes constantly. So they can both be original at iPhone 11, you swap it over, and then it will not function correctly.
Apple says, for example, that it's an issue of security. Like, if your phone was modded without you knowing about it and someone put something that wasn't authorized by Apple on it, wouldn't you want to know about that, and wouldn't you want to make sure it's fixed properly? But it is ultimately locking out a lot of third-party repairers from being able to fix it for you.
You'll come across this with batteries. If I swap out my aftermarket battery with the original battery, it will constantly hassle the person, telling them, it will say important message. And then when you click on that, it will constantly be there in your settings saying, you need to take your phone to an authorized repairer to have this checked. No ifs, ands, or buts. It will not at all ever drop that.
So basically, an Apple battery would have to work with an Apple phone. You need that Apple branded battery for it to work.
Not even that. So awesome example. If I buy two brand new iPhone 11s, I then take them apart. So they're both Apple original. I take them apart and I swap over their batteries. They will still come up with that message.
Wow.
So it's effectively just making sure that only Apple and only people Apple wants to repair the devices are repairing it.
It makes no sense, one bit whatsoever. Like, you're talking about the same thing. These aren't materials that are made differently. They're one for one exactly the same.
So Apple says this is for safety and security reasons, that, you know, they make something that can only work with their software. Are there other explanations for that?
So there's a couple. A lot of it also comes down to just the way that they're designing the phones now. So, you know, if you look in the last couple of generations for iPhones, for example, everything is sort of packed into the device as much as possible. Like, the screens are quite basically seamless with the rest of the product. Mm. You can't sort of see any screws on the device. I mean, there's probably one or two. And that just makes it harder for repairers to sort of access, the battery or fix the screen and stuff like that. And, you know, Apple says that, you know, they're now designing their products to be functional and beautiful and made to last. But the side effect of that is it's harder to repair. You know, to be fair, I think the screens in phones generally have gotten a lot better in the past few years because they've been able to now design them in with relatively scratch-resistant glass, and that does make it better. But I guess the offset of that is it also makes them harder to replace.
We're, as a community, as a repair community, we're just asking that You don't stonewall us. You don't make it impossible. Let us MacGyver or our own ingenuity work out how we're going to provide these repairs.
So while for customers this might be, you know, better for them, their products are lasting longer, repairers believe that, you know, these changes that being made to these devices are forcing them out of the market.
I don't sit there going, oh, bloody Apple's made a proprietary screw, this is drama. I sit there going, it's my job as a business owner to work out a way around that one and provide that solution for my customers. But then don't serialize the camera that it doesn't work unless you go to Apple, because that's absolute garbage. All we're asking for is when you get a particular chip that is prone to failure or a particular part that's required to talk to a phone, if it makes sense, at least provide us with the tools to be able to enable us to do those repairs the same way. And even to go a little bit more on their side, even if you don't want to provide us with the tools, don't make it impossible for us.
Are tech companies allowed to do this sort of stuff, you know, design phones so that they can't be repaired by anyone but themselves?
We've seen Apple in particular bump up against Australian consumer law time and time again when it comes to a lot of these sorts of things. And in 2018, they had to pay $9 million after it was found that their iPhones were wrongly telling customers they had an error when they had their phone fixed by a third party. So that was sort of the perfect example of Australian consumer law stepping in and saying, no, people do have a right to repair their own devices and you know, they shouldn't be seeing this sort of error.
Okay, so it sounds like there's issues across the industry with very specifically designed parts. Is this the only issue, especially when you come to these independent phone repairers, as you mentioned earlier?
It's not just the design. It's also the cost of the parts to repair a phone. So The Productivity Commission got submissions from repairers who have said that parts are becoming so expensive that a repair was often just as expensive as a replacement.
Mm.
You can be priced out. There's definitely parts in the market that make repairs very hard to make economically viable for the customer. So when you're at a point where you can pay for a screen replacement, say for example, that's X amount of price compared to buying a whole new device that's only a couple dollars more, or even within that same price vicinity, it doesn't make sense. And then they go purchase a new one. And that's, I mean, depending on what your opinion is, I think everyone can agree that that's a bit of a shame, not only to be out of pocket that much, but then also you've got a brick that has had to be taken out of the earth and then it's just cast aside. Like, there's no purpose for that anymore. It's just junk, which as a human species, how long can we keep that up for?
Great.
I appreciate it.
Okay, mate, I'll get us to pause our records and I'll talk through getting that file over.
Yep. Pause it.
Next, the movement pushing for more repairability and less e-waste. So Josh, Max told me that he's concerned about the waste that this current system of repairing phones can produce. I'm wondering exactly how much electronic waste is the world producing right now?
It's been estimated that there are more than 50 million tons of e-waste generated every year and only about 20% of it's recycled. About half of that is large household appliances and the remainder is TVs, computers, smartphones and tablets.
Yeah, that is pretty horrifying to think about, just these mounds of waste around the world. Are there big pushes to change that and transform this industry?
Well, there's been a burgeoning right to repair industry in the US where they're basically trying to get the government in the United States to act and force companies to make their devices repairable and allow repairers to have access to the tools that they need to be able to repair at a price that is, you know, sustainable for the industry.
Has that come over to Australia in a strong way?
It's a lot more disparate in Australia. I think the main focus in Australia is largely through the consumer rights groups like Choice and things like that. There's not really sort of a movement as much here. I think, you know, the push that we've had for repairs have largely been through those organisations.
And what has that push led to? Have there been big reforms worldwide?
In the past few years, the European Commission announced plans aimed at ensuring that a range of projects will be recyclable, repairable, and designed to last longer, with plans to halve the e-waste across the EU by 2030. And in the last year, we've had the Productivity Commission undertake a report into the right to repair, and the draft report for that came out a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, can you tell me a bit about the Productivity Commission? Who are they and why were they looking at this issue?
So the Productivity Commission is the Australian government's independent research and advisory body. They look at a range of different issues, usually tasked by government. There's a lot of economists and subject matter experts in there who are essentially just tasked with conducting inquiries, looking into what an issue might be, what can be done about it, and what potential changes may need to be brought in to address some of those concerns. This inquiry came about because there was an issue a couple of years ago with recycling in particular, Australia having difficulty sourcing places to send our recycling, and obviously that had flow-on effects in a number of states. And the government seems to have seized on concern, particularly around e-waste, as something that they are interested in and the federal government can have an impact on. So that's why the Productivity Commission was tasked with looking at right to repair. They had about 300 submissions and comments to the inquiry, a lot of consumer groups, a lot of repairers, a lot of just individuals who were quite frustrated with what they couldn't do. The report a few weeks ago essentially found that Australia needs to make it easier for people to repair their devices. It wasn't so much that Australians don't have the right to repair, it's just that any sort of consumer thing, you have to end up taking it to court, or unless the ACCC sees, I guess, a common issue and takes it on themselves. So it's harder for individuals to get any sort of relief in a way that is cost-effective for them.
Okay, so what did this report recommend?
So the report ended up coming out with seven major recommendations out of the inquiry. One of the most interesting things is that, for the most part, the Productivity Commission found that Australian law should be up to the task of allowing Australians to have the right to repair, but it's just not really enforced all that well. So they recommended that the ACCC should provide a minimum expected durability for household products. So that means, like, when you buy a washing machine or a new TV or something like that, you can look up on the ACCC's website and say, well, it says that this product should last maybe 2 years, and then if it breaks down after a year, then I can go to the manufacturer and say, hey, the durability for this is not what I expected. Can you do anything about it?
So it's minimum standards, basically, across the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing they were looking at doing is whether consumer groups should be able to collect complaints about products and then lodge what would be a super complaint with the ACCC.
A super complaint.
Yeah, so it'd be effectively like, hey, we're hearing a lot of people complaining about this particular dryer or this particular TV. Can we get a super complaint lodged, and then the ACCC can investigate and then potentially take action against the manufacturer for it?
Right, so instead of them dealing with 700 single complaints about one issue, they just look at it all as a whole. Would that be right?
Yeah, and I think the issue is that a lot of people don't want to take these actions themselves, but it might be a way for people to sort of get a fast-track resolution rather than having to wait in court for a long time to get you know, a minimal amount of money back when they could have just got it resolved much quicker.
What else did the report say?
There was a case a couple of years ago where a hobbyist website that specialised in laptop repair got sent cease and desist notice by Toshiba, which is a laptop manufacturer, for posting on their website manuals for how to fix your laptops. And so they're suggesting that the law should be changed so that hosting this sort of material would be considered fair use, and therefore it would be fine for them to do it without any running into any issues of infringing on copyright and things like that.
So basically people can just share information about repairing things online much more easily is the idea.
Yeah, it's freeing it up so that everyone can, you know, from your hobby repairist or someone who knows a bit about how to fix their laptop who has a laptop breakdown, can look it up online without fear of breaching copyright law.
Anything else of note?
There's a couple of things about improving waste targets and expanding the recycling scheme to allow for products to be repaired and reused under the national recycling regime. But we're seeing a little bit of this in the private sector as well. Telstra, for example, has sort of ramped up its sort of targets on e-waste and recycling. So they're now recycling around 500,000 phones per year. So that we're seeing a bit of that happening already. One interesting thing as well that they're also doing is they want to put GPS trackers on e-waste. So when we ship it off overseas, we can actually see where it ends up. And that's a major issue with rubbish, not just e-waste. We don't really know where a lot of it ends up. So I think that's actually quite a nifty sort of idea. It would be a good way to have some accountability for where this is ending up.
Okay, so these are just recommendations from this commission. Do you think that they are likely to be implemented and to create much change in this space?
Well, so there's still a few months before the final report is handed to government in October. There's going to be some roundtable discussions with prospective stakeholders before then.
Hmm.
It's really hard to say. These productivity commission reports can tend to gather dust a bit sometimes. But I think some of the changes are quite easy for them to make, and particularly around the ACCC wearability, durability, and the idea around creating a super complaints process that can be done without any real sort of legislative change is not too hard to do.
So hopefully they'll just get adopted, basically, some of these.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of appetite, particularly with the ACCC and within the government to do this sort of stuff.
Mm. So basically we could be looking at a future of some tighter regulation around right to repair, but this push doesn't really make sense business-wise for a lot of tech companies, right? Do you think that this kind of tension that's inherent in this industry will mean that some of this design and some of these issues are going to stick around for a long time?
I think ultimately, as with a lot of things in the tech industry, a lot of it will be driven out of what's happening in the United States.
Mm.
And there is a movement there for repairability and things like that. So I think sort of whatever comes out of there will kind of follow here. I don't think that the major manufacturers are going to take into account repairability in their product development. I think their focus is, as Apple sort of said before, about making products that last. So I think that's probably going to be front of mind for them.
Mm.
But I will be interested to see, you know, when I was looking around a few of these, there is a burgeoning market in making devices that are easy to repair. And I think that is probably one point of differentiation with some new entrants to the market. Now, whether that is something that people look for when they're going to buy a product, I'm not sure that there's a huge market for that there yet. And ultimately, you know, particularly with, say, phones and things like that, people sort of tend to stick with what they know. So it's one of those things that it's still in the early stages, but I guess we just need to wait and see.
Right. I've seen kind of make your own phones, phones that can be broken apart into building blocks advertised online before, but I've still gone and bought the iPhone, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Once you're in a certain ecosystem, it's very hard to switch out and do something different. The shiny new features that you see on all these new devices that may be hard to repair might be hard to resist if it comes down to a choice between, you know, the shiniest, flashiest new phone or something that you can repair.
That's it for today. Thanks to Josh Taylor for his time. You can read some of his reporting on the right to repair and on this Productivity Commission report at theguardian.com. We've put some links to those on the full story page as well. If you want to learn more about Max Hawker as well, you can check him out on TikTok at Max Hawker. This episode was produced by Ryan Pemberton and Miles Herbert. The executive producers are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson, and myself, Laura Murphy Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.